Hi there. Thanks for downloading, watching, and listening to the Lean Into Art Cast, the show where a couple of visual storytellers get together, take on various topics that tend to occur, bubble up to the surface, get in the way, cross our paths when we take on this endeavor of communicating with images. We think hard about this stuff, so you will too. My name is Jerzy Drozd, and I am a cartoonist and teaching artist, and the other host is...
Hey, Jerzy. I am Rob Stenzinger, and I'm a user experience designer, wear of various hats. So, here we are. Going to talk about a thing. Relaxing thing. And not that it's not relaxing to explore topics, right? It's sort of almost so natural it's meditative to dig into stuff. Even if it's things that are not so, that are just squeamish or challenging of like, things that were, you know, especially if they're common hangups among us, it's such a safe place to explore that stuff. It's kind of nice, but this time we're not even pushing it to that limit.
No. So, if you're new to the show, typically we pick a topic that tends to be somewhat timely, something we're kind of dealing with in our work at that time. And then we drill down as far as we can on it. The first half of the show, we talk about what it looks like when we're engaging with this particular topic. And the second half of the show is usually how we think about it. But every once in a while, we do an episode called Reading, Watching, Playing. And what that is keeping an eye out for what things we're doing to unwind and to recharge the creative batteries. Because I think a thing that we sort of grew to accept as a philosophy, I think in the making of this very podcast, is this idea of like, let's not glamorize effort. Let's not put effort on some kind of fetishized pedestal, right? Like, did you work hard today? No, then you don't deserve to be here, you know?
Exactly. You like creative challenges? Oh yeah, I challenge you to chill out about creative challenges.
Double challenge. Relax.
Exactly.
So, but there's material to be mined in there in sharing the things that we use to recharge our batteries, because it's, you know, it probably will be of interest to somebody else if we find that there's some value in it. And then also thinking aloud about it gets us to examine why it is that we're gravitating towards this thing, which is more of that analytic eye we've talked about on the show hundreds of times, probably, you know, that idea of like when something moves you or affects you or you feel some kind of visceral reaction to it, then the next question as a visual storyteller is to ask yourself, why did that happen? And how did they do whatever they did to make me feel that way, right? So that's part of it too, although I don't want to put too much emphasis on that for fear of turning that into another glamorization of analysis, right?
Let's go ahead and turn fun back into work.
Yeah, quick. I was talking with a friend of mine who just led a bunch of workshops for kids, and he sent out a questionnaire ahead of time to ask the kids like what they were reading and why they liked what they were reading. And like he was reading them to me over the phone. And he's like, so many of these responses are like, I just like it. I just like to read it.
That's wonderful.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something we should remember as well. Lots of things can be true. Okay. Do you want me to hit the music and get this underway?
I'm ready.
What are you ready for, Rob?
Oh, I don't know.
Could it be...
Let's do this!
Now we're pumped up, and now we're fully into the topic. We have these little musical transitions to get us from one place to another, and to let everybody who's listening, if you may be listening passively, if you're listening while doing some other activity, you're driving to work or you're drawing at the art desk, and maybe we're just like some background noise, that little music punctuation says, hey, wait a second, things are changing. So, all right, reading, watching, playing. What are we reading, watching, and playing? You wanna kick us off, Rob?
Yeah, okay. So let's see, what are some things that pop across? I mean, I think a lot of times I encounter stuff based on other media I follow, right? So if I follow a podcast and someone creates a thing, or I follow someone in, you know, social networking and they create a thing, especially if it resonates with the reason why I follow them or what have you, there's a decent chance that media is on my radar. So I think a couple of the things I've been reading are exactly that circumstance. So first off, I'm reading the book Ruined by Design by monk Mike Montero. I think it probably is just Montero. Mike Montero. Anyway, yeah, he is a a fairly well-known designer, writer of various things. He wrote the book, You're My Favorite Client, Design as a Job, and both really good books. But this one is more, it's taking a pretty serious look at the general circumstance of things that have, that the collective community of technology and design has created, and how some of these things have pretty severe negative side effects that haven't been addressed and are inherently at tension with the model in which these businesses are running, right? So if, as designers, we would be aware of that and not necessarily just thinking about only some aspect of the experience, where, like, if you think about the whole experience of using something, of, hey, what's that thing? I heard about it. To, oh, I guess I went there. Maybe I'll sign up. Oh, I signed up. And then, oh, okay, I'll use it a little bit. To, oh, this is a habit now. And, I can't stop using it. Or I now have found so many purposes for using this. It's just so practical where doesn't even make sense to even change my use or whatever, right? So there's this progression of your relationship with a thing. And the easy comparison I'm making is to essentially social networking tools. But then this book is saying that it's a thesis that it would probably help the design industry to have some form of licensing and the Hippocratic oath and an oath, right, to do no harm. And so some of it is, I mean, it's like finding a way to ethically experiment. There is a way. There are industries that find paths forward through making new things come about. So he brings up some really interesting points, and I haven't gotten far enough in the book where I think at some point it's also like a rah-rah, let's do this, but I haven't gotten there yet.
Well, I remember Mike Montero's, he was co-host of a podcast called Let's Make Mistakes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And if I remember right, he had kind of a grumpy disposition on that show.
Yeah, he's got that kind of acerbic wit. And but honestly, when you listen to enough of his stuff, he actually has a huge foundation of sweetness and love, you know? He's got a lot of that. It's just, he just has a great style of saying things in a manner that I don't have as a, that's not my strength, right? Mm-hmm. My strength is that even if I'm super frustrated in a circumstance, I will try to find the common ground and point out how we should be there and how we could possibly get there. And in a way that isn't about engaging in a fight. And he's got more of a scrappy tone.
Well, yeah, I would say that he has more of a tone where he's not tolerating what he perceives to be foolishness. Right?
Oh, no, definitely not. Suffers no fools, for sure.
Yeah, and inefficiency and thoughtlessness are not things that he has a lot of tolerance for. So, yeah. But that was one of the things that I found very charming about his presence on that podcast. So I imagine that his
writing me too. He seems so effective at it. I question him, like, you know, should I use more of that confrontational approach? I don't know, but yeah, he's certainly great at it.
Interesting that you should bring that book up, because I just finished an audiobook about design thinking and design approach to problem solving. Have you read this, Rob? The Achievement Habit?
No.
By Bernard Roth. So a friend of the show, Nate Marcel, was messaging me and telling me about this book and said, like, oh, I recently read this and I thought of you and Rob. And sure enough, as I was reading it, listening to it, it was an audiobook read by the author. And he is a designer, he leads a design team, and he talks about like the principles of design as how it applies to like virtually every aspect of your life. And I don't think he quite does it in the style of every problem is a nail, but he starts talking about things like there's this whole section where he talks about reasons are BS, and he starts talking about how in a design situation where you're trying to make something for a purpose or a function or for a person, and if you say, well, I just made it that way because I felt like it was the best way to do it, or I've made it that way because I liked it that way, it's like, well, that's not, those reasons don't contribute to improving and iterating on the design. And then he goes through and starts talking about like reasons we give for actions we do in our lives. And at first I'm sitting in the car listening to this and I'm like recoiling. I'm like, whoa, don't you dare tell me that rationalization is fruitless and there's no utility to it, right? Because we can't just say there's no reason why we do what we do.
Is he making a distinction between reasons and rationale?
I think he is making that distinction. Yes. Okay. So, there was a lot of interesting thinking. I'm not going to say that I necessarily walked home going like, oh, I'm putting all this in my pocket, but it was an interesting point of view. And it was again, I'd say in a relatively similar neighborhood to Mike Montero, a little bit of a, all right, I've had enough. Let's just improve things and stop talking about it all the time kind of attitude about his writing style.
Oh, so, there's a ton of common ground there because the whole, the discipline of design is primarily a problem-solving set of thinking tools. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, framing things in a way that you can then discover strategies forward, including yourself in a system of how do you participate in the problem and make different outcomes happen. That's pretty great. That's great. Is it really all framed as like achievements? Like when I hear achievements as a habit, I see a video game where it's like achievement unlocked. Floating up from
it's a little bit of that, but it's more like I would say if I were to put it in my language, I would call it the shipping habit, like how to actually just ship on stuff and improve, like iterate and improve on the stuff for a service driven or purpose minded approach to making things. He does use there were some parts of the book where I was just kind of like, okay, yeah, that's something that people use as a some kind of artifact of authority as he talks about like big successes in his career, which is great, but I was more interested in the process that led to the successes than anything else. But so it was good. I'm not going to say that I loved it, but I thought it was very interesting. Folks are showing up in the chat. And we've got Carrie's in there and Song Dance Geisha's there. And they're saying that the video looks different. I am not aware of how the video looks different, so that they're using new effects and they are great. What effects are we using? Everything's so crisp and clear.
Oh, I don't know.
Do Hangouts change the way they do stuff?
It could be.
I have to go back and watch the video after this episode drops.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, better compression, better streaming. I don't know. That'd be my guess. So good to know.
Yeah, that's good to know. What else have you been reading, watching, or playing, Rob?
Oh, let's see. I think another book I found pretty interesting was Planet Funny by Ken Jennings. And I think I heard his name mentioned at some point, but then encountered him through the Omnibus podcast, where a show with a premise that reminds me a bit of Galaxy of Super Adventure, right? So Galaxy of Super Adventure is a podcast that you and some art friends do. That the whole premise is, it's as if, what is it? You're on a spaceship visited by Muppets that happens to be like a co-working space, and other adventures get in the way of talking about making stuff. Kind of, right? It's a lot of fun. It's a really, really fun show. I do recommend people check that out. But like, so there's a premise of Omnibus where it's like it's Ken Jennings and John Roderick, where they're, you know, they're theoretically recording various Ephirma and trivia and stuff that they care about, and they want to make sure it's in a time capsule for future generations. And what they assume is that something's happened and now future generations have discovered this, right? So they break this character all the time, whatever, but it's a fun show. And it was one of those things where one of the co-hosts, it was mentioned that, well, Ken Jennings, who is like this very, very accomplished repeat Jeopardy game show champion, turns out, that he was really into studying humor, and he wrote a book called Planet Funny. And it was one of those things where I was like, yeah, okay, that's cool. Nice. But then just didn't feel like acting on it. And then after, I don't know, listening to like 50 more episodes of their show or whatever, something happened where I'm like, I got to check this book out. Because he made me laugh enough times. And I don't know what that number is. But, and you know, it's a pretty interesting book that is, okay, again, Planet Funny. And it's more or less a tour of past and present circumstance that led to how common humor is being used, right? Where there were many venues where humor was not allowed or not welcome or very much looked at it as a separate thing. And that's less and less the case. And he makes a really interesting case. And I think, you know, not to, he makes some interesting points. And I think his core thesis is surrounding how maybe using too much irony and not enough sincerity, like if the dial is pointed all the way toward irony all the time, that probably has more negative side effects than people think. So, and I think he makes an entertaining case that seems pretty reasonable.
Hmm.
And I really, yeah, it was pretty fun.
So Planet Funny is the name of the book. All right, cool. That reminds
How about you, Jersey? What you watching or reading?
So something that I started. So, having just moved to Columbus, one of the first things that Anne and I did was we went to the Columbus Metropolitan Library to get our library cards. And upon getting my library card, I got a reminder from them that, you know, we have like not only the books here in the building, but you can use our service called Hoopla to download and stream ebooks, audiobooks, and videos. And I'm like, that's right, libraries are doing that now. And I keep forgetting to avail myself of this. And so I got the app and I start flipping through. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a whole bunch of stuff in here that I would actually, you know, like there'll be great assistance to keeping me company at the drawing board. And so something I've been digging through this last month is the great courses. They have a whole bunch of great courses, video and audio series on.
Oh, nice.
In their collection. And every library is going to have a different collection, but if they use Hoopla, then they'll probably have access to this. And I've been listening to King Arthur, History and Legend. It's like 11 hours of lectures about the history of King Arthur, starting with contextualizing the historical information. Like, okay, let's figure out if King Arthur actually was a dude. And here's what information we have. There was some guy at, you know, 500 Common Era who was in this place, seemed to have built a fortified structure. Was his name Arthur? We don't know. But there was like some guy who was like some amazing warrior who actually managed to assemble a pretty large community in this fortified structure that didn't happen anyplace else, right? Was there an Avalon? Well, there was this burial site where they found like these really big bones of this big dude, and it was on what was at that time an island, but then the water receded. Now it's like just like this big outcropping of rock where this tomb is. So like maybe, right? But then like it goes into the legends. Like, okay, well, here's what some French authors wrote about it, and here's how these English authors came in and like added to that, and here's how these Welsh authors came in with their folk tales and built into that. Here's how, you know, some people in Spain kind of built into it. It's like you're watching how this story accretes all this material over the course of this 11-hour lecture series, and it's super interesting, super fascinating, and it's exactly the kind of stuff I like to listen to, right? Like, you know, mythology, folklore.
Forming of myths, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And how that ties into the historical context, like what was happening at the time, like when, say, Wolfram von Eschenbach wrote his version of the story, like who was he writing it for? Who was the patron that he was trying to please, and how did that affect the choices that he made in the narrative and things like that? So it's a deep dive. But there's a whole bunch in there, too. Like, I was also listening to one. It was, I think I wrote it down, didn't I? Yeah, The Secrets of Great Mystery and Suspense Fiction. So it's, like, it's just analyzing, like, Sherlock Holmes and Miss Marple, Hercule Poirot, and, like, you know, hard-boiled detective fiction, and looking at, like, what are the tropes? What are the commonalities? What are the differences? What are the characteristics of that genre? So, yeah, I've been really, really digging that. I mean... Is that relaxing? I find it relaxing.
Yeah, that's the thing. I really have. Maybe that's a myth that maybe we grew up with that maybe isn't a thing anymore, right? But there's, I'm guessing, I'm sensing, and I'm trying to explore. Is there a distinction between like work and learning and fun that they are separate rooms or separate things?
Right. Don't get your work in my fun, and don't get your fun in my work.
And definitely keep the learning out of there, right?
That's right.
So if you're working, you're not learning. If you're whatever, right? Yeah. I mean, but at the same, I try to, I guess, in the spirit of reading, watching, playing, and recharging, I try to de-emphasize the work and the expectation of productivity, and at the very least, just try to blow off the idea of expectation of productivity. Like, I need to be, you know, earning something from this, or it's a resource that I then mine to then earn from, or whatever, right? It's not that evaluation or measurement is, I think, I don't know. Is that a thing you're wrestling with?
Or no, well, I mean,
hinting
it's just,
at, or?
No, it's more that, because I am listening to this without any purpose or agenda. It's just like, I think this subject is endlessly fascinating, and I would like to hear more about it. And this is one particular aspect of mythology that I haven't done a lot of deep diving on. So let's do a deep dive and just have fun doing it. But not, yes, like when you think about like work, or you think about effort, you think about like, what do you got to show for your time? That's not the purpose. I'm not doing it for that reason. Although I am making notes when something really interesting happens. And like, for instance, there's this one part of the, when we get up to like the round table part of the mythology, where in one particular version of the story, you couldn't sit at the round table unless you were free of the sin of lustful thoughts, right? So you could never have had a lustful thought to sit at this table. And one night comes along, is like, wow, you know, one little thought, it's not that big a deal. And if I just walk confidently enough, no one will ever know. And he sits down at the table and the earth swallows him up. And it's like, that's a horrific image, right? It's like, you think about that, that's like the stuff of children's nightmares, that kind of image. And like, I immediately thought, grab that. The fact that I felt like a little thrill of horror when I was listening to that part of the story, I need to make a note of that to pick at that later on. Why did that horrify me so much? And I've spent some time thinking about it since then. I'm like, okay, well, how can I use that in my work? Not that particular image, but that kind of idea, right? So there is a little bit of like intentional gathering, but I'm waiting for the moments to happen. And I'm really mostly listening just for the pleasure of it. So
I think that's important. And I pointed out and put it in, you know, a structure or whatever, because I think it's sort of a mindset where if I have an intense week or multiple intense weeks, one after the other, I don't know. I do sort of have a harsher judgment when it comes to like, what am I doing to relax? And is it, I don't know. I try to throw up those walls more severely or whatever sometimes. And not as much as I think. I think I'm getting to a different stage with that. But yeah, it's something that comes up. And once in a while, like if I'm stuck in that mindset and then I'm starting to get work ideas or ideas for being productive from what I'm enjoying, then I'm like, what am I doing? Am I working now? Crap.
Yeah.
But yeah, then try not to worry about it.
Yeah, that is one of, I think, something that's common to both of us in terms of like just general disposition, is that the line between work and fun is very fuzzy for us. And that's not to, I'm not going to make a good or bad judgment on that. It's just, it is what it is, right? I think it's our quantum state is, that it's like a quantum state where it's like it's both at the same time, depends on when you're looking at us. So
sure. Schrodinger's enjoyment.
Yeah. Schrodinger's work day.
Yep.
What else you got?
Okay. Well, let's see. Something I've been watching that it just so funny. It perplexed me at first, but then I really got into it. It's this, it's a like 15 episode anime series on Netflix called High Score Girl. Hmm. And the premise is There's a couple of main characters. One of them is, you know, there's a, you know, a young guy and there's a young girl, and they are both really into arcade games, right? And the young guy is pretty immature. And
is this rated PG? Can I play some video on the screen?
It's pretty rated PG. The challenge is that the introductions and stuff on, I didn't find a great video for like a preview on YouTube for some reason, because it's kind of like it doesn't talk about the, because I'm talking about the dubbed version on Netflix, not subtitle, although I watch it with the subtitles on, and it's kind of funny how the dialogue's a little bit different. But it's an entertaining series about just growing up through a couple of life stages. They go from elementary school to middle school to early high school. And the main character deeply loves video games and is growing up in the era of early 90s. So,
this is your jam.
So it's hit me on a few levels.
Yeah,
and it's a fascinating his relationship with his friends. It's very interesting in how things progress. I don't want to spoil anything because the whole point is the relationships. But the relationships are interesting, even though like there's one character who I'm not going to say if they ever end up talking or whatever, but first couple episodes, they're not talking. And I think, what is this about? But it has a hook. It has a purpose in the story, and I bought into it. And that's kind of funny when I experience something that is challenging to me that has me going with it, and because it's tempting to not go with it, and I felt it was really a worthwhile, cute series, and it really goes into video game nostalgia big time from the 90s and fighting games. Oh my gosh, I want to play fighting games after I watch that show.
That's awesome.
Because I mean, there's so many things I've forgotten about games in that era. Even though I own a lot of games from that era, but like certain minutiae and where things where it's like, oh, I mean, I'm into it and I love it, but I've never achieved beyond casual competency in them, right? So they're talking about like very extreme skill in these old games, and it's just really fun. It's like reading a video game magazine from back in those days.
Oh, yeah. Super cool. So what was the name one more time?
High Score Girl, where high score is spelled like high score in a video game, HI-SCORE. Yeah.
Very cool. So my watching pick is returning to one that I've talked about on the show before, and that is the Tick on Netflix, on Amazon Prime.
Oh.
Now I can't remember, Rob. How familiar are you with the character of the Tick? Like the cartoon from the 90s?
Yeah, I collected some of the 90s comics.
Man-eating cow.
I did not collect every one. It was sporadic, but I was very entertained by the Tick.
So for those who maybe haven't read or seen the cartoon, the premise is that it was like this very lighthearted, silly satire of superhero storytelling, where the Tick is this nigh invulnerable character who has no origin story. He just like shows up in this place called the city, and he befriends this accountant named Arthur who has this stolen moth suit. And they decide that they're going to be crime fighters together, and they fight like really bizarre villains, like a guy named Chairface Chippendale, whose head is a chair, you know. Thrakazog is like an alien from outer space who lives with a roommate in like the top floor apartment of the Tick's building. Sewer urchin like lives in the sewers, and that's his power, so he's a sewer urchin. The cartoon was like very, very close to the comics, but this new show, they've diverged from the comics somewhat in that they've made it much more rated R, which I originally would have thought I would have been repulsed by, because it's like, the premise of the original show was very bouncy and happy, and the Tick is like, take the 1960s Batman, the TV Batman, and make him sort of self-aware of how good he is, right? And he's not doing it for camp. He's doing it because he believes in it. Like, he's like, he calls Arthur chum, right? And he's like, you know, heroes don't kill, because that's too murdery to do it that way, right? And so now they take this guy who's like so comically heroic and good, and drop him into this rated R world full of like truly like bloodthirsty bad guys, and another hero's named like what was his name, Overkill, and he's like this total 90s guy with like knives all over him and guns all over him, and when he kills people, like he kills bad guys because he's a gritty hero, and when he slices them with the knife, like it's like Fist of the North Star, where gallons of blood like shoot out of their body, you know, and like the Tick is like constantly trying to stop him from doing that, right? He's like stop it, the good guys aren't that murdery. Anyway, season two just dropped, and I am continuing to really, really enjoy it. And despite the fact that it's got so much edge to it, but it keeps the spirit of the original comics, where it's very lighthearted, it's very silly in its approach, but it still feels, it feels like it's not laughing at the Tick, it's laughing with the Tick, if that makes sense. So.
I am intrigued. I saw the first episode of season one after you talked about it a while back, and it was funny. It was good. It was familiar tone, but like that's such a fascinating thing to me when someone can write sort of a layered tonality in a story that has like really severe circumstances and lighthearted stuff at the same time. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, ever since I was I kind of left behind trying to write the gritty stuff, and I don't worry about that as much, but like on it, I can see that being such a worthwhile territory, right? It's just like, wow, that's so skilled and admirable, because it just, it's the kind of thing where it's when it's done skillfully, it's like a place that I would find really hard to reach. And I don't know why, like that's what it leaves me standing there. When I look at it, like, gosh, that would be.
If I guess it feels like it's holding a lot of feelings at the same time, right? It's sneering at some things. It's trying to scare us and intrigue us with other things, but then it's trying to lovingly celebrate other things, and then it's trying to like actually write like a true emotional arc for some of the characters in other ways. And like with some characters it feels very honest and very true, but then with other characters they're not afraid to let it get melodramatic. Like Overkill has a terribly dramatic backstory, and it's so dramatic that like he has to like crouch down and brood when he talks about his tragic backstory, and it totally feels emo, over the top and ridiculous, but it still has like this honest charm about it, where it's like, yeah, we're laughing at him a little bit, but like it sucks that he feels pain because it's not his fault, you know. They've done something really special with this version of the series, and I'm really impressed by it, and I can't say enough good things about it. It's a superhero show that I actually really look forward to, and it feels like even I'm starting to get burnt out on how much superhero stuff is out there, where it's like, yeah, I'll see it eventually, I'm not in a hurry to see this one because there's just so many. But this is one that I'm like, oh, when I found out the season two dropped, I'm like, I'm there. So, do you want to talk about something you're playing before we kick into the second half of the show?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's see. So, easy to pick a variety of things, but I'll pick one that there was this indie game that I don't remember how it came across my radar, but it's called Ape Out. Or it's Devolver Digital, right? So I think that I have the impression that they're a pretty successful small studio. So, you know, I guess it's not like a single person, single developer kind of thing, but like the premise of Ape Out is you are an ape in a lab that breaks its rusty cage and squishes stuff on the way out. You know, the there's lots of folks with guns in your way, but then they try to shoot you, and you squish them and you get out. But here's the funny thing. Sounds brutal, sounds horrifying, right? Yes, but it looks like oh gosh, what is it, Saul Bass or what have you? Like, it looks like a poster from, it's almost like an animated Vertigo movie poster where the ape is in silhouette, the people are in silhouette, it's abstracted, it's violent, but then the music's dynamic. So as you're moving around, it's like, and there's no conflict. It's like, you know, like just kind of mellow and jazzy. And all of a sudden, like, oh, there's a person nearby. There's bongos. And then it's getting a little more intense. But then the person notices you and then just like, da, 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 and it like gets more intense. And then when you shove that person at a wall, it goes, it's like,
oh my goodness.
It's a drum hit.
I'm looking at it right now.
it's a drum and cymbal hit. And so you're participating in the music while you're breaking out.
Oh, wow.
And it's pretty fun, honestly. It's intense, though. So yeah. I bought this game to relax before bed. Bad idea. Yeah.
Okay.
Where I'm just like, because it pulls you in such a significant way. I guess like all those layers of the being in danger. You're not like super powered, really. It's a strong, you know, you're the strong ape, but like you're pretty vulnerable. Jeez.
The ape just smushes these guys.
But it makes drum hits when he does it. That's great.
Except
for before bed. So that's my only hesitation.
Ape out on Steam. Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. I picked it up on the Switch.
Oh.
So it's on a variety of platforms.
Yeah, Charles Totfeld is in the chat and saying that game is pretty Kill Bill in its aesthetic. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Both in terms of like the color and the visual styling, but also in the level of violence. Cool. Well, and I do appreciate that it's an animal doing the violence, you know, because we shouldn't keep apes in cages after all, unless it's an injured or endangered ape and then we're trying to rehabilitate them. I'm not going to go any further than that with this. I've already dug myself into a hole. Let's take a break, Rob.
Sounds good.
Okay. So in a minute and 30 seconds, we are going to, look at some other tools, things to think about when it comes to reading, watching, playing. I don't remember. What's the teaser for the next part, Rob?
Well, let's see. There's this other angle. Like sometimes we do reading, watching, playing, and then it's like, and some helpful stuff. So there's always a longer list than we have a chance to get to. So coming up next, we're gonna pick and choose from the list that we didn't cover yet, because there's always good conversation about the things we're reading and watching and playing. But then there's a couple of things that are just helpful tools that deserve a mention that don't always fit in a regular episode. So there's good stuff coming up.
All right. So in a minute and 30 seconds, we will talk about that. And before we do that, we have to thank some people who make this show possible. Those people happen to be the folks who support us on Patreon. Patreon.com/leanintoart is the website. What is it? It's a way for you to give us a monthly upvote. If you believe in us and what we do, and if you get value out of these discussions that Rob and I have every week, you can sign up at patreon.com/leanintoart and contribute as little as $1 a month to help make the show more sustainable. And I want to thank five people who've been doing exactly that. First up, Nate Marcel. There's Nate's second mention of the show. You can find Nate on Twitter at GreatCMonster. Thank you, Nate. Also, Brandon Dayton. You can find Brandon on Twitter at Brandon Dayton. Brandon's been sharing some pretty interesting images for an upcoming project that I think you should check out. Also, Shawnee Redfearn. You can find Shawnee Redfearn on Twitter at Shawnee Redfearn. Thank you, Shawnee, for believing in us and what we do. And Ashley Knapp, longtime friend of the show. You can find Ashley on Twitter at Control-Alt-Lee. Thank you, Ashley. And finally, Greg Horvath. You can find Greg on Twitter at IGMHorv77. Thank you, Greg. And you can join them all at patreon.com/leanintoart, where you will find all the shows we make, as well as the extra leans, the shows we record only for people who support us on Patreon. And those posts become an open mic post where you take the conversation wherever you want in a safe place where only fellow leaners are hanging out. One more time, that's patreon.com/leanintoart. And we thank everybody who has been supporting us there. It means a lot to us.
It really does. Thank you so much.
All right. I got to do some other music so we can transfer to the next section, right?
Yeah.
All right.
What will it be?
How about this? Something a little bit more intense.
What is that?
That was the wake-up call that we're in the second half of the show. Actually, that was Brinstar by Stimage.
There we go. Okay.
Metroid Metal. I'm staying on brand.
It's good stuff.
Okay. Where do you want to go next?
Okay. All right. So is there a utility or thing that you think has been just sort of making stuff easier or is just really handy that you want to give a call out to?
Well, I mean, I guess going back to something I was talking about earlier, when I was talking about like the great courses thing, I've just been getting a lot of value out of streaming materials from my local library. And there's Hoopla. You can check to see if your library has that. But then there's another app called Overdrive. And the Overdrive app is okay, but they made a new one called Libby. And this one is great. It works really well. And it's mostly, I don't know if that you can get videos on it, but you can get books, ebooks and audiobooks on it. And I have been consuming audiobooks like crazy on Libby. And as you can see on the screen, you can get it for the App Store or the Apple App Store, Google Play, and you can get it for Microsoft. So you can get it at the Microsoft Store too. It does a really good job of, you know, you can bookmark chapters if you're listening to an audiobook. You can download it to your phones. You're not like streaming it on the go. But just checking out your local library to see what content that they are offering for you to download and stream, because you're already paying for it with your tax dollars after all. So why not? Instead of,
And it supports artists and whatnot too. It's,
that's right.
Because, I mean, libraries tune in to what circulates, and that's, that's part of where, I mean, they'll license more electronic content or they will, of course, buy more physical books based on popularity. So I think it's totally supporting artists by doing that.
It is. And also it's sometimes you find, stuff that is not in print anymore in there. I found a couple books that I've been, meaning to read for a long time. Some old C.S. Lewis stuff, like collections of essays that I just can't find anyplace else. So, I've re-fallen in love with my libraries through those apps. So what about you?
Yeah, that's great. I actually, I've been a Libby user for a while and it's, I would say I dabble in it a bit and haven't made it like a huge habit, but it's pretty easy to use and I like it. That's a pretty awesome one. But I've been curious, like just before I share a utility, you seem to speak highly of Libby. Is that sort of like, how does that stand compared to the other ones? Is there, do you just get them all? Is that the best case?
Let me clarify. So in my case, it turns out the Ohio library system is pretty freaking awesome. Like if you can get library cards at multiple cities in Ohio. Mm-hmm. So I have one for Columbus and I have one for Worthington. And so my Libby app, I can log in with both accounts and I can borrow on both cards. So like I can actually borrow more. It's gonna be different depending on your state, right?
Sure.
I also just noticed that the Libby app is more stable than the Overdrive app. At least on my Android phone, it crashes a lot. The Overdrive version does. One more thing about Hoopla too. The Hoopla app, it lets you stream via Chromecast. I don't know if it works with Apple TV, but that is pretty nice. So yeah, like while I'm in the studio, I can have the TV going with the Great Courses or whatever, playing off of my phone. So, and I also watched the Pokemon movie on recently that way, and the DuckTales movie. Remember the DuckTales movie from like the late 80s with Rip Taylor?
Rip Taylor. No, I don't.
It's a genie story. He's a genie and he's playing Rip Taylor as a genie. It's pretty interesting.
So what's funny is I know I should be able to get Rip Taylor in my brain, but I can only recall Rip Torn, who was Beastmaster.
And yes, and Zeus and Hercules. So Rip Taylor was the guy with bags of confetti and the big mustache, and he would always say, "It's funny." he's like you'd see him on like Laugh-In and things in the 70s.
Oh wait, I think he was on Bewitched.
You might be thinking of Paul Lynde. Maybe Paul Lynde and Rip Taylor are pretty similar dudes, so like they probably maybe they did something together.
Because I'm picturing a large mustachioed fellow, you know, just chucking confetti. But I don't know. This is pretty much. I'm an unreliable witness of some, you know, childhood TV stuff. So yeah. Okay. So cool. Thanks for clarifying. So it sounds like I might want to get those other apps as well. To see, because maybe they have different strengths, different media types and stuff.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I feel like Libby is the design feels. I haven't sat down and looked at it with a designer's eye, but the design feels more intuitive to me than the OverDrive mm-hmm. app. The OverDrive app feels like how apps looked about 6 or 7 years ago, and the Libby app looks more modern and like. Thoughtful in its approach, and I can't tell you why. I'd have to play with it more and get back to you.
I totally don't want to play. I'm listening to like, well, what would you say stands out about it? So it's not like I was the designer, but I can tell you what I think.
Okay.
I don't want to plan an idea. I want to hear you.
All right. Your idea. What Libby gives me upon launch, the information that I absolutely want upon launch is like, what have I checked out? And how do I get to find more of it? So there's like two things to hit. It's like your checked out items and the library itself. And then at the bottom of the screen is the play button of the last thing you've been playing, so you can continue playing that thing, right? So it's like very, very simple. But OverDrive is like series of lists to dig through, right? It's more of like nested
gotcha.
Lists.
Yep, lists and filtering. Sure, that is, yeah, definitely an older sort of approach. Because... it seems like a lot of the filtering happens by asking you thoughtful questions. So, because to me the Libby app is very conversational.
Yeah.
So it's being a sort of app version of a librarian.
Saying, it is.
Hey,
you're
what
right.
are you into? Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. And then the alerts that you get on the right side of the screen. When you tap it, it'll be like a chatbot kind of interface. It'll say, "Hey, I got a new tutorial to share with you. Do you want to watch it right now?" And then you can say no, and she's like, "Okay," and she goes away.
okay, cool. Thanks for clarifying that, because now I have some new apps I need to try. As far as let's see, what has been a really useful one that I've been, because there's a few. That I have on my mind. How about, it's tough to endorse because of the price, but I thought it's interesting that finally there's another alternative on the Mac to SoundFlower, because I like SoundFlower, but I never found it that intuitive. It's almost like once I got something to work through trial and error, cross my fingers that it just forever works or once I need to reset up my computer or whatever, it's just like, ugh. It's a lot of trial and error to get it set up again. I never like mastered SoundFlower. And the whole idea behind SoundFlower is that you want to create new audio sources and then merge existing audio sources and stuff to be able to route stuff into apps. And if you combine it with something like Audio Hijack, then it's easy to record some interesting, complex things on your computer where typically you only have one output. And this sort of, it lets you have some virtual outputs as if you almost like you're making a mixing board of multiple ports and stuff. And, what's their name? They even make Audio Hijack.
Rogue Amoeba?
Yeah, Rogue Amoeba. Thank you. Well, they've made an alternative called Loopback. And Loopback is not cheap, but it works and it's easy. So after I sweated it a little bit, I bought it because for me, the use I was having was partially automated transcription. And I'll use it for other things too, as far as podcasting and other audio projects. But like, that was the pain point that I really had is, to essentially, it's quirky on the Mac where like it has built in, voice transcription. If you know, I forget what they call it, like Siri transcription or something. And, you can activate it in like any text area, but then I have this habit of using a different app to record some audio journal stuff, right? And I mean, I've used this app too to record a few episodes of the Polytechnicast during Art Sound Off, for instance. And it's called Just Press Record. Nice, convenient app. It works on my watch. It works on my phone. It works on the desktop. It's, you know, it's kind of nice. And it, all those little journal clippings that are all audio save, what is it? Apple iCloud, whatever. Handy, because they're everywhere. Just sort of works wherever I'm at. And it, what's funny is, okay, so that app has built-in transcription, but it has quirks that I don't really like. So if you use built-in transcription, you can't participate in reshaping and fixing errors along the way, right? Whereas let's say you unboxed a lot of thoughtful things and you want to turn that into a draft for a workshop, for instance, or a blog article, whatever, right? Even just turning it into a text journal entry if you want, as far as capturing like the key summary or what have you. It's handy to be able to listen to the audio and let the computer transcribe and pause and reshape it as you go. And so that doesn't quite work by default on the Mac unless you're somehow routing the output of your audio as, let's see, the output of an app that's playing your audio file as if it were a like your mic input device on the Mac. So it has to look like an input device on the Mac in order for the transcription to take that as a source to then transcribe what it's hearing. Anyway, hopefully I described that well enough.
Wow, yeah, yeah.
But along the way, what I do is then I'm hitting play, you know, and I'm hitting a couple keyboard shortcuts to turn on the transcription, then hit play on the file, and I'll make tweaks as I go, and just adding a couple paragraphs here and there, instead of it ending up as this mega block of text with many errors and no formatting. I experimented with that for a while too. It doesn't work that well for me as a reference. It's just, it's not like a handy resource in the end.
Mm-hmm.
So
loop
long
back.
Walk for that, but
no, loop back. And the other one was, just press record for the Mac. Now, just in case there's any Windows users out there who are like, well, that's all well and good, but Rogue Amoeba doesn't make Windows stuff. Well, the Windows version of that is, Voice Meter. And that's actually what I use to record the Lead Into Artcast right now is what I'm using. And it's the same kind of idea where this is a multi-channel recording application, and they have plugins that you can download for free. They'll give you a little prompt like, yeah, you should really donate because this is a pretty cool piece of freeware software. And I did donate because that's, you know, I want to pay for what I get. But it's the same kind of idea where so the way that we do the show right now, I have a soundboard application open, and I have Voice Meter set up to route all of the audio on my Windows machine into this channel that I'm speaking into right now, right? And then Rob's coming in another channel, and it's getting all mixed down at the end of the show. But I can actually pot Rob down right now, and you wouldn't be able to hear him at all, or I could like pot myself down, and you'd only hear Rob, right? But it's the same kind of idea. It's an audio, you create like virtual channels for different devices that are plugged into your machine and like incoming audio from different sources. And then you can mix it down. And there's that tape cassette icon, Rob. I don't know if you can see it on the screen. So when we record, when I'm done recording, you always hear me say, okay, I have to eject my cassette. It's because it uses that metaphor, like where I have to go
that's
to
fun.
The menu button at the top. And I hit that and it's like eject audio cassette. And then you're AIFF file is free to edit in any other application that you want. So that's at vb-audio.com. It's Voice Meter and Voice Meter Banana. So see, both, we are cross-platform on the Lean Into Artcast.
Yeah, I try to be, I don't produce a lot on Linux that is like multimedia, but I do dabble, and so especially command line stuff. It's funny. Every once in a while I get the urge to set up like a main desktop as Linux again. Because yeah, it's nice to be cross platform, and that is an interesting different world of many things are free by design. And there's ways to support and give back that are different. But it's a different world. It's not a world typically of, clicking infinite scrolling terms and conditions, which is, it's kind of neat.
But yeah.
Not my main thing right now.
Yeah. And I that sounds like such a fun hobby to take on, is to build a computer myself again. I haven't done it since like 1999, 2000. and that was a lot of fun, and it'd be fun to build my own Linux machine and like try to get, so there was like a bunch of discussion on, art Twitter, as the kids say, about, Adobe Creative, what is it called? Creative Cloud, like doubling their subscription rates. And so a lot of people were posting
for
like,
real. Okay,
That was the discussion. I didn't dig that deeply into it.
Is it hypothetical, or I don't know? Interesting.
I don't know. I said there were people talking about it, and I didn't follow up on it that closely. It's just that what interested me about the discussion was a lot of people started talking about, okay, what are the alternatives? What else is out there that we could jump ship onto, right? And like Affinity Designer and Affinity Photo, is that what it's called? Anyway, like, there's some low priced, really good looking applications. But then I was like, yeah, that's nice that they're low priced and well designed. But like, what out there is free that would be really good? Because yeah, like I want to go back and just see if you can get like a nice desktop system with everything on it that's just running on freeware, open source freeware software. There's something feels very pure about it. I know you've done that before. You had that at one point.
Yeah, I was. I was mostly not on Adobe. I love Adobe, and they've done so many great things. I do think there's a complex sustainability problem in the world of software, and at all scales. So when you are an independent software developer and you sell something for $50 a pop, $99 a pop, you don't need that big of a market, and you can probably make a living. But the nature of the market has driven the cost of software down to very little. And it creates this challenge of sustainability, because it's whatever. I mean, living is expensive, and supporting software takes a lot of time, creating it, inventing it, all that stuff. I mean, it's a lot. So you get this combination of complex apps are having a hard time, staying afloat, and sort of find some expensive subscription model to live. And then you get a lot of just crap, simple apps. So it's like, yeah, okay. I'll throw my little coin in the wishing well as a flashlight app or whatever. And, it's this hard dynamic in the market. I mean, obviously artists of all kinds face this, where prices get driven down. So you have Adobe is obviously a big entity, and I think big entities have a tendency, this is a whole other topic, whatever, I don't know, but like from what I've witnessed, large organizations ultimately find their best market as other large organizations. And it's hard for there to be something that seems fair for individuals and small businesses. So I don't know. So it kind of makes sense that this is happening. I don't like it. I'm glad that the world has alternatives, and I'll say that. I mean, truly, it takes some adaptations, but in practice, but really, Linux has been a viable option for a long time, and that's a free ecosystem. I have a. All right, put it back. I've been playing around with taking apart some old laptops and stuff, and also seeing which ones still work. I have a Fujitsu Lifebook from 2004 or 5, right? Still boots and is running an old copy of Ubuntu. And it's not just a laptop. It is a, what did they call it? It was one of the early tablet PCs. So the screen opens up, it turns around, and you can lay it down, and it's a thick, it's heavy, but,
it's like 7 pounds,
but it has a Wacom digitizer built into the screen, right?
Wow.
Yeah. And, this is like finding a television and at a, like a, I don't know, a ranch from the 1800s or something. I don't know. Whatever. Tablets have existed for a long time. Anyway, it still runs, and I can run. The GIMP is their GNU image manipulation program. Totally has pressure sensitivity. I can draw. I can make comics. I've tested this. It works. So you can find other paths besides the difficult thing with it too is the pressure and the expectation of everyone in the marketplace of like, oh, your clients will expect you to have X software, right? You make your documents in Microsoft Office, don't you? It's the same kind of thing as saying like, well, you do use Photoshop, don't you? And Illustrator.
Yeah.
Anyway, thankfully there's competing options and stuff. I still like Adobe. I don't know, but it's getting pretty, it does seem like they are increasing their rates for my quick search, by the way.
Okay. Well, yeah.
But I haven't super verified that.
Yeah, we don't have to go into that any further than that, except that the discussion led me back down that rabbit hole of looking for alternatives and seeing how far they're coming along, right? So I was really surprised when I looked at what Affinity Designer looked like. It's the InDesign competitor. And it looks nice. You can download a free beta right now before they roll out their full version. And all their other apps are like $50. So $50 to $70.
Which to me is fair. That's a reasonable price. If you wish that company to continue to exist, if you buy a $50 app and it's, supported for some chunk of time and isn't like put through some forced obsolescence, whatever, it's really fair.
Song Dance Geisha's in the chat says, thank you, Clip Studio, for having a one-time fee. So here you go. You talk about like...
Except for
iPad. Yeah. That's such a funny thing because like when I see it working on an iPad, I'm like, ooh, that looks nice. Maybe I should get an iPad. And then like I think about that $10 a month thing. I'm just like, oh, it just stings just enough to make me stop. But before that happened, because it was a one-time fee and because it was a reasonable fee, $40, like a full price, right, or $45 for like the pro version, not EX. When it enforced the I tried installing it on multiple machines and it was like, oh, you can only install on so many machines, you've exceeded your number, and I was like, okay, I'll just buy another one. Like there was no friction. I was like, I'll just buy another license so I can put it on this other machine too. And because I had so much goodwill for the company, because I felt like they were treating me fairly, right? Whereas like
that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's the ideal scenario, right? So okay. Do we have any more to take on, or do we want to get ready for a final thought?
Well, I think we've definitely explored plenty of utility. Put some bonus utility in there. So happy to go to do a final thought. So do you have an idea to explore?
Well, Charles Tofeld offered this in the chat, and it kind of is tertiarily related to the conversation we were having earlier, but it didn't have a direct way to plug in. So I was thinking like maybe this could be final thought in that way, in that it's only like loosely affiliated with what we're talking about. So he asked, do you think that as an illustrator, it's an effective use to try to utilize the library when it comes to learn how to market yourself? Like this, because I was just singing the praises of libraries earlier. Is it still a viable place to do proper research on a topic, right? Or is it a place where you just go to get the latest Harry Potter? Or is the stuff going to be, like the nonfiction stuff would be terribly out of date? That's an interesting question. And then I think there's more layers to that question as to like doing research to up your skill game and other aspects of your career. What do you think? Want to try it?
Yeah, I'm open to that. Sure.
Okay.
Let's see where we take it.
Yeah, that's true. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, you can ask any question, and then we just see what happens.
That's true.
It's wonderful to start answering one question and, whole new fields of topic flowers will bloom. You never know.
All right. Well, how about in a couple of minutes, we'll try taking that one on and see what topic flowers do bloom. But before we do that, we got to thank some other people who make the show possible. And those people happen to be us. We make things and then we bring the thoughts that we have while engaging with these topics to the show. And the thing that I work on that I hope you will check out is the Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival, which is coming up in like a month. And that's in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's a2caf.com. And what is it? It's a free comics festival. It's like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of Father's Day weekend. So that's June 14th, 15th, and 16th, 2019. A lot of great guests are coming to this show this year. So Judd Winnick's going to be there. Ben Hatke, Zach Giolongo, Lucy Nisley is going to be there. Jerry Kraft, Raoul III. A pretty stellar lineup of people who are all going to be doing events. So it's not just coming to go to, you know, like the marketplace and buy some books from Artist Alley. It's like these people are all leading presentations. Like Judd's doing a workshop on like the 12 things you need to know in order to make up a story. I'm going to be leading a workshop there. There's like Gameful comics workshops like Zach Giolongo's Iron Cartoonist. But the thing I hope you will check out most of all, even if you can't come to A2CAF, is the Kids Comics Awards. And there is a ballot at a2caf.com/kidscomicsawards where if you have a young person in your life who read a comic from 2018 and really enjoyed it, they can vote for it if it was nominated. Here's the nominees, right? So like Amulet by Kazuki Buishi, Sanity and Tallulah by Molly Brooks, The Cardboard Kingdom by Chad Sell, Encounter by Chris Giarrusso. And there's 40 books nominated in 7 different categories. And only kids can vote, please. So get the young person in your life. They can vote via online ballot. There's also a printable ballot that you can download and that your child can fill it out and mail it to the library, and those votes will be counted. The winners will be announced on June 16th, 2019 at the Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival at a special Kids Comics Awards ceremony. So once more, that's a2caf.com/kidscomicsawards. Rob.
Hey.
Congratulations to you, pal, because you finished a new thing that we get to make noise about on the show right now.
Oh, my God. Thanks. Thank you. I honestly, I really appreciate that. I put a lot of work into this. It's a new class that I'm offering via the Skillshare platform currently. And what it is, it's about drawing user journey maps to design user experience and gather ideas and collaborate. Its essence is this combination, this hybrid of, I mean, if you've heard me explore things on Lean Into Art, if you've ever been in one of my workshops, you'll get the idea that I think it's important to explore the mechanics. I think it's important to get hands-on experience, but I also think it's important to think about the thing, right? And that's what this workshop is. It's like 47 minutes, and it's a lot of, I think, core ideas, especially in the last 6 years that I've been developing and putting to work. In places where I've worked and consulted, that are, you know, you bring together ideas from different perspectives that are all about serving a user, right? And maybe even serving multiple users in your audience, and mapping out a journey and then adding different layers and integrating those perspectives. It can get really contentious. It can feel not collaborative, and there's a lot of good collaboration tips in here too. So, but very practical. It's a series of, it's like broken into 9 lessons. Just, you know, between like 3 to 9 minutes each. So hopefully it goes by fast and you learn some stuff, and it's hands-on. So there's actually a class project to create a user journey, which could be hypothetical. You could explore something that's just sort of playful and fun to just get into the practice, or you could be doing some problem solving, exploring something related to your blog, your portfolio, or your product page or product itself. And anyway, then there's a link to, if you're like, hey, it sounds awesome, I'd like to check it out. It does involve signing up to Skillshare. And so I have a link at robstenzinger.com. That's just, it's right there on the homepage. There's also one on the talks and workshops page. And yeah, it just click that link, then you'll go straight to my class page on Skillshare.
Very cool. Oh, so exciting. And there's, Carrie's in the chat saying, I'm on Skillshare. I'm going to go check it out immediately. See?
Oh, that's so awesome. Thank you, Carrie. And I was guessing that I bet some leaners are on Skillshare, and I forgot to mention that. Thank you, Carrie.
Yeah.
super great. Cool that you're already there.
So, and it'll be linked in the show notes as well, in case you didn't hear robstenzinger.com.
Quick mention, I think the easiest way to find it, if you are already on Skillshare, is just log in and search for me, Rob Stenzinger.
Ah, perfect. Okay. So if you're not so much interested, well, actually, if you found that interesting, there's more stuff like it at leanintoart.com/workshops. It's more stuff like the show, self-contained workshops. You can download at a price of your choosing, even free. If you're watching the video on YouTube, giving it a thumbs up helps more people find the show. And if you're listening to it in a podcatcher like Apple Podcasts, Google, you know, Android, Google Podcasts, giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to us helps more people find the show. By the way, while I'm on that topic, thank you to the people who have been commenting on the YouTube videos and emailing us to let us know where you listen to the show and how you engage with the show. That's very meaningful, and we appreciate you taking the time to give us that information without us even making a formal survey. So thanks to everybody who has been interacting with the stuff that we make, giving us positive reviews, and, you know, sharing our show with their friends. It means a lot to us.
It's awesome. Thank you so much. I actually didn't notice. I wasn't getting those alerts, so I'll have to go check out those comments.
Yeah. I meant to point you at them because I get them because it's on my YouTube channel. Some people were being very kind and letting us know how they listen to the show. That's cool. Okay. Final thought time. I like the idea of backing up just a little bit and abstracting out Charles's question about, like, leveling up other skills that are necessary to doing your work, right? So, like, for instance, one of the things that we do at the Ann Arbor Comic Arts Festival is we do these things called quick draws. And quick draws are a 30-minute exercise where two cartoonists who maybe don't have a ton of experience doing workshops or presentations can just get in front of a drawing pad and do some live drawing for a crowd. They take input from the crowd and they put the ideas together on a drawing pad. It's, like, fast-paced, but it's low risk, right? Because it's only 30 minutes. There's no formal topic that you're supposed to be, like, talking about. You're just doing what comes natural to you in the sense that you're drawing. But the idea behind it is to present artists with an opportunity to level up on public performance, right? Something that isn't necessarily doesn't come naturally to people who take on this career of sitting at a desk for hours on end. And I think about that a lot, like when I'm teaching students, like, how can I connect them with opportunities to level up things like self-promotion, marketing, public speaking, and all of those things that artists historically often will cringe at the thought of having to do that, right? And so is the library a place to get access to that information? Rob, do you go to your public library often, or are you mostly engaging with it in an online way?
I would say it's mostly online, and very rare occasionally is it sort of my own self, my development. It's commonly, if it's for my development, it's an opportunity because I'm there with my kids. And so a library is a fantastic resource for when you have kids, right? It's as far as, you know, just different libraries, different sort of thoughtful play and education resources, and of course lots of books and media. It's a different way to engage instead of being having everything we consume be where we are a direct consumer and paying for it. It's nice to see it's sort of like a public benefit model, right? It's just neat to expose kids to that, and of course it saves money. But then for me, I think of it as, I'm going to abstract your abstraction.
Oh boy.
Here we go. So you go from, hey, I want to level up regarding, you know, marketing resources and then it's like, well, I want to level up, and you're describing the, how you can find an event. And in a way, maybe I'm not abstracting, I'm just emphasizing. So if you think, I want to learn something, and if you can find a way to study that thing enough, but then use it to serve another group, it's a very powerful way to learn, where you're essentially sharing the thing that you studied which causes you to engage with it very differently, because it's not just you understand it enough for you to just sort of clear a hurdle or accomplish a task. You're understanding it enough to help others understand it as well and to get their own experience of clearing a hurdle and accomplishing a task. And that kind of engagement with a topic is it's very affecting. And I wholeheartedly endorse that. So finding those opportunities is it's a community thing. So that's exploring and, you know, tuning in and asking around, right? So events is definitely a thing. And tying it back to libraries are a place that puts on events. And so maybe you will end up studying the marketing at the library, but then working with the library's like programming folks, you might be able to put on your share what you learned for your journey of marketing as, you know, whatever your business is, via a presentation at the library or a workshop.
Or
so
here's another way, yes, of building on what you just said. So first of all, I would say, like, as far as like the books and the resources they would have there, every library's budget is different. It depends on where you live. But public libraries, as opposed to, you know, academic libraries, tend to have very different kinds of collections, because public libraries, the books aren't meant to be on the shelves all that long. So you have a better chance of something being more recent at a public library, whereas academic libraries are about preserving information, right? So they're here to find like old editions of things, because, you know, it's about keeping the record of everything. However, I think both are very useful in their own ways, and I would use my experience working on Rockets, Science Comics Rockets, a graphic novel, or rather a comics documentary I made with my wife Anne, where for 8 months we were going to libraries and consuming and reading as much as possible about like the history and science of rockets, so to make this book, right? And the making of the book was our demonstration of our understanding of the research. So let's say you do want to go to a library and do some research on marketing. Well, can you then summarize what you learned in a comics essay that you can share online? Like, right? Which it becomes something useful for your community, but also becomes, it's practice for you as the artist again. It's helping you internalize the information, and it's creating something that could potentially help some other people, which helps build a constituency around yourself. So, yes, I would say that the first question is it a place to get good information? You bet. Even if it is one that's not as funded as well as another one. But then the next question is, what are you going to do with that research, right? How do you put it into practice? And just saying this out loud now, it's like I get to thinking about like when I attend Tyler James's different webinars, because Tyler James is a great person to follow for this particular subject of marketing. He thinks about it a lot. Is could I attend one of his workshop series and then summarize it as, say, a 12-page mini comic, right? You're doing a report.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, in just putting something into practice will create more experience with that knowledge and more context. So that's I honestly, it's hard to like put that into. So if you have a blog, it's a great place to then channel that into. That's like you don't have to go to the extent of, so, you know, now I'm going to perform it as a presentation, or make an entire graphic novel out of it. But that's a nice example, really practical model where, turning the research into a practice. So whatever that would look like. And it can look like just getting ready for a creative challenge. Say you're going to, you know, do like a small product development thing and you're going to announce it to the world and then make that part of the practice. It's funny. We mentioned the whole, I don't see a lot of it online right now, but like, yeah, there's this, the small product lab that Gumroad did was full of these kind of ideas. And it was about, both learning and practicing, where they did a little bit of like, well, here's a quick crash course, go do this stuff and, you know, like make a plan to launch your thing and then just try it, go So probably not as in-depth, but like it's not mutually exclusive either. Like you can try a variety of these approaches and chip away at it. So all of a sudden a year passes and you probably have a lot more of a foothold on anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, I hope that got anywhere. I hope that got someplace close to what Charles was looking for. Or at least, you know, maybe there's something useful in that.
I got one more thing. So if you are just sticking with the library, mm-hmm. you're pulling on a thread, you're exploring, you're digging into a topic. Typically, a lot of great books have their resources and you'll have a bibliography. Pull on those threads, right? So the names of the people that are the ones who wrote the books, that if you're finding the useful information, see where they are around, because almost everyone is online doing something, right? And then also the things that they thought were an important basis of their work, and those are great threads to pull on, because if your library doesn't have an exhaustive section on a thing, it has a signal pointing to more toward more things.
That's a great way of putting it. Okay. Rob, I think we did a podcast. I think.
Awesome. Agreed. Concurred.
Okay. Second. All in favor? Aye. All right. The motion is passed. We have a podcast. Do we have enough people in the chat for a quorum? That's what I need to know. All right. So we record the show every week, Thursdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. And we stream it live on YouTube, collected as a podcast at leanintoart.com and patreon.com/leanintoart. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey Drozd on Instagram.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of leanintoart.com. And I'm also on Instagram as Rob Stenzinger.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.